On today's show, we discuss Twitter's redesigned business pages and look at the direction the company is going, as well as asking why phablets still exist. Later on, we'll be talking to the community manager of World Irish, Dara Dial, about his philosophy on community management and social media.
And you're very welcome to the show. We're joined here today by Aidan Coughlin and Sarah Kavanagh. Guys, thanks for coming in again.
Thank you.
And we'll start off, first of all, with Twitter's new business page. If you've checked it out in the last few days or so, you may have noticed that it's been redesigned, a new focus on business pages. Aidan, if I can start with you, what does this bring to the table for Twitter?
I think it provides small business owners, in particular, an added incentive to advertise on Facebook. I was reading over the course of the week there that there's much bigger uptake on Facebook rather than over to Twitter when it comes to uptake of SMEs, and you know, which is really such a massive appeal of online marketing over more traditional forms of marketing, where you can spend a smaller amount and get delivered results, where traditionally, you know, companies like these would have been limited to local radio and local press ads. They're the ones who are taking this up, and this is a guiding, this is a way of showing them how to do that and how to do it effectively.
And the kind of the design as well, it's very, very bright, it's very cheerful, it's very colourful, yeah, massively so. And even like the kind of use of cover photos as well for the business pages as well. How, you know, how much of an effect does that have, John, when people are visiting Twitter for the first time?
Personally, I think it looks a hell of a lot more professional than it did. And I think if they're trying to encourage new users for the first time, especially new businesses, to actually invest in this as an advertising platform and a way of engaging with their audience, I think they need to look professional. And the previous offering that they had was all over the place. It was cluttered. It wasn't very obvious what you could do. So I think for businesses visiting Twitter for the first time and seeing this, I think it looks like a nice suite of tools that they can use.
And does that kind of style represent where Twitter is going at the moment? Because they've just released new cards there. I don't know if you've read that just there today. They've three new cards. One of them is Gallery, which displays four photos. Has Twitter, you know, not jumped the shark, but has it gone from just a simple service to now a full multimedia site that goes well beyond what it was originally intended to be?
It certainly goes well beyond what it was originally intended to be, but I wouldn't say it's taken too many steps in too far of any one direction. It's an evolving site, it's a growing site. In fact, every site is an evolving site or growing site. If it's not, it's dead in the water very quickly. It's going to throw out new features like this every now and then. Some of them will get taken on, some won't. Normally a new feature on any social medium is going to seem a little bit ludicrous until it's got a bit of a stronghold in the thing. And I think it's the healthy evolutionary process of these things.
It's still a microblogging platform at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, like, blogging itself has evolved and has changed over the years, and this has too. It's still 140 characters, but now it has photos, now it has videos, now you can add a gallery. So, you know, there's microblogging and then there's microblogging with media, and I think that's the direction that they're going in.
So it's very much a case of keeping up with the times.
Sort of, yeah. Like, I mean, as Sarah touched on there a minute ago, I think the only thing that Twitter could do to make it not Twitter anymore is to get rid of the 140 character limit. They haven't showed any signs of doing anything of the sort. If they did, there'd be absolute outcry. Whatever they put in on the side is really just going to be, you know, it's the big step was when they introduced pictures and videos and stuff like that, and, you know, everything else, including Vine and this, they've all been just little tweaks of the major change they initially made, which was the addition of media to tweets.
Right. And moving on, the next interesting thing that I noticed there in the last few days or so was research from Flurry, which basically did a compilation of all the different phone sizes and tablet sizes and phablets as well, and basically came out with the statement that phablets are pretty much a fad, with very, very few uptake, you know, and the most popular size are mid-size phones, kind of the ones that have that the size of iPhone 4S and the Samsung Galaxy S3. Does that surprise you in any way, guys?
It doesn't surprise me, no. I think phablets are... And look, this word was banned in the Simply Zesty office.
Yes,
by
none yes.
Than you, Quentin, so I'm looking to see it coming into the...
I can't bring personal feelings into this podcast. That was one of the rules we put in
that's,
when we started.
That's fair enough. Well, I think they are the indulgence of the indecisive. I think people... I had a bit of a dilemma when I went to buy my iPad. I wasn't sure whether I wanted an iPad or an iPad mini. I went for the iPad because I already had a smartphone and I wanted something that separated it from that. You know, there was a good clear degree of separation from that. People who don't maybe have a smartphone, people who are making their first step into that whole world, and they might want a phone, they might want a tablet, they might not be sure which, so they go for a phablet. It's the worst of two worlds, I think. It's not small enough to be an effective phone, it's not big enough to be an effective tablet. Sure, they are very cleverly and intuitively designed to get around this shortcoming, but no, they're, like I said, the indulgence of the indecisive.
Yeah, I think that's a very small demographic for phablets. I hate that word. And as Aidan said, it's the indecisive people, or what I would classify as the BlackBerry generation.
So why would you say that? That's a bit mean.
I'm thinking of my dad when I think of a phablet, and he uses email a lot. He uses his smartphone, in inverted commas, for emails and for phone calls, and that's all he does. And he is dying to get one of these phablets. It's just a phone with a bigger screen that's totally impractical to use as a phone, but does everything he needs for email.
So is it the appeal of the larger keyboard? Would that be a part of it?
I think that's it.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And it's the bigger screen because he's like semi-blind as well. Like, so I don't know. I have it in my head that if you're a typical businessman working in technology or pharmaceuticals and your age between 45 and 55, you're going to love these devices. And that might be horribly stereotypical of me to say, but I think that's what the target is for these devices.
Yeah, generally devices, though, that are targeted at people in perhaps not their technological prime, they have a short lifespan. They're generally transitional devices, you know. So a fad, I think, is a good call.
So they have a demographic, but it's a very, very small one in effect.
It's a small one, and it's not a particularly long term valuable one, put it that way. And it's one that will probably progress either to phones or tablets in time.
And just finishing up as well, what would be the perfect screen size for either of you, for a phone or for a tablet even?
I think the iPhone is too small. And the Note is too big. Well,
right.
Kind of the Note, your version on the phablet size. So I would go...
Galaxy S3?
Yeah. I'm actually looking at the HTC One at the moment.
Ooh.
And I want it as soon as it comes out. But if I have to say a phone that's currently on the market that has a perfect screen size, S3 would probably be it.
I'd agree the iPhone is a tiny little bit too small. I would like a very, very minimal increase on that. Although I massively appreciated the change from 4 and 4S up to 5. So I think, you know, every millimetre counts. So maybe even a half centimetre around the sides would do me absolutely fine.
Right, well, we'll wrap it up there. Sarah, Aidan, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Now, managing brands' online accounts can be difficult at the best of times, but what happens when that brand happens to be a country? Well, Dara Doyle is the community manager of World Irish, a place which unites all Irish people at home and abroad, as well as provide a reference point for those interested in the country. I started off by asking him, how do you even begin to approach such a project?
I suppose it's about how you talk to people and how you engage with the people who kind of come to your website and what you say to them and what you give them and all that kind of stuff. And it's been a very interesting project. It's been running about 3.5 years now through various guises. I've been with it for about 1.5 years. And on a daily basis, I'm in communication with some 60-odd thousand people around the world, either via Facebook and Twitter and social media or on the site itself. And you just treat everybody as a person, and everybody has a different reason for being there. And everybody has a different way of engaging with you or talking with you. And most of the people don't care who you are and don't care that you're a community manager. All they want you to do is answer their question and get the job done so that they can go and enjoy the parts of the site that they're there for.
Because I was going to say that, and it's funny you brought that up. A lot of brands would, or companies would, have somebody behind their Twitter account or Facebook account answering questions and doing that. Yet you're a very unique case in which you're the brand. Like, if you want to know anything about what's happening in Ireland or any questions answered, they go to you directly. And it's
That's why World Irish hired me. You know, it's a good hire for them. And I like what I do. But it's also... So there's a small team in World Irish. I think what people have this view that World Irish is this massive corporation. There's a team of about 11 people total working on the World Irish project. And we divide out the Facebook and Twitter between us. So we have journalists writing stories on the website, and they will tweet out or write out their stories, and then... I have a colleague, Emily, who will put things out on Twitter and Facebook, whereas I would handle all of the customer service queries, the awkward people, the trolls, the media, and all that kind of stuff. And we all kind of learn as we go. But I suppose I've come from a very, very strong customer service background, and that's why I love doing it. I love sorting out problems. I love dealing with people. You know, it's very funny. People don't really understand what... community management is about. And I'm trying to say, I'm not really in marketing because it's not my job per se to get people to the website. But when they're on the website, it's my job to make sure that they have a good time there and that they get what they're there for and they go away happy.
And that personal approach is what people like about the site and about the initiative in general. That, you know, the tone of the site, the content, most of it very lighthearted, very very personable as well. So you enjoy coming back to it, and you can't wait to see what the next story is, or what the next fad or next, you know, compilation
what the next
is
thing to come from Ireland or some Irish person around the world is. Yeah, I mean, with World Irish, one of the things that I love is, because we have the team of what are called community journalists, but basically what they'll do is they'll scour social media every day in a similar way perhaps that Storyful would have scoured the web for the trending stories. So we look for the Irish content that is being shared online or the interesting stories that are out there. So, for example, it could be something as simple as photographs of the Aurora Borealis over Donegal, or it could be like the Taste of Ireland had this amazing photo of this huge truck in Sydney just before Christmas that was the delivery of Tato, Lion's Tea, Quality Street and all that for the Irish shops in Sydney.
Right.
And there's people from all around the world who have either emigrated from Ireland looking at this content, or people who have never been to Ireland who are going, what's the Cliffs of Moher like? Or in their American accents, or
whatever. The Irish person saying that would be, they'd be kicked out of the country immediately.
And then the other joy of it is you get people asking questions like, so is everybody in Ireland Catholic? And they're very serious. They have these questions that need to be answered, and you do it in a way that's not judgmental. It's trying to educate people about Ireland. It's almost an ambassador role, working in a website or a project like that, because you'd like to think you are giving a positive impression of Ireland and you are giving a tourist impression of Ireland. One of the really interesting experiences that I had last year was we share a photo of the day, right?
Right.
And it was coming up to the 12th of July, and I shared a photo from Belfast, right? Because again, in a non-political thing, we look at Ireland as the Ireland of Ireland. Now, if you identify as part of the UK, brilliant, and if you don't, brilliant, and all that kind of stuff. But as our photo of the day on World Irish, I put up a photo of the bonfires, one of the bonfires being built in Belfast.
Right.
Right? And my God, did Facebook explode with people telling me that tricolours were burned on this, it wasn't Irish, it was completely anti-Irish, you should be ashamed of yourselves and all this kind of stuff. And I'm sitting back, and the community management part of my brain is going, uh-oh. And the other side of my brain is going, this is brilliant. At least people are talking about this. And people are sharing their impressions and their stories and sometimes their knowledge and their ignorance of it. And I think everybody who read that whole thread kind of came away with understanding the situation a little bit better. So I was kind of going, okay, that works.
that probably is why you're kind of a perfect fit for the role. You approach it in a very positive manner, because as you were saying, a lot of community managers, I imagine myself included, would be freaking out over a situation like that. How did you approach that situation? Did you engage at all, or like with the comments?
I put my hand up and I went, actually, I didn't know a lot of this. Thanks very much for telling me.
And a lot of people wouldn't
people
scope
just,
for that.
People just react much better to that no bullshit approach, I find. When you do something wrong online, my first thing is apologize. Then take it down. If you have to take it down, whatever. Like, I mean, I know we can talk about a million situations that have happened, but the apology is so important. Going, yeah, I'm sorry, made a mistake, didn't know that.
One of the big things about your position is I do notice, following you on Twitter, you do attend a lot of events around, you know, around Dublin, around Ireland as well. And that's also refreshing in a sense, because like when you think community manager, you think somebody just communicating through Twitter and Facebook and so on. How important is it for you to get out to those events and be mingling and be interacting with the community?
I've just had a huge 2-hour conversation about this with a very good friend of mine, Christian Hughes, and we were talking about right. Christian is a very well known blogger and tweeter and all that kind of stuff, and we were talking about back in the day when there weren't as many people blogging or tweeting. I'm on Twitter like something like 6 years now, right? Twitter's 7 years old, so I've been online a while and blogging a while and whatever. And there used to be PR people used to have blogger events where they would invite bloggers to come, meet the brand, see the new ad or whatever, give them pizza and beer, and hopefully they would blog about it and give them USB keys or whatever. Loads of things. In the same way that journalists would have been getting all of these press releases and gifts. And sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. But thankfully, it has now died a death. The events that I go to, or the things that I go to now, are things that I'm actually genuinely interested in. And when somebody contacts me, and PR people, I do love you, but some of you, I would just question why you contact me, to say, oh, we've got a new iPhone app and we're having a launch and will you come to it? And I'm going, but I don't have an iPhone, I'm on Android. So your iPhone app is completely irrelevant to me. And it's actually also completely irrelevant to all of the people that follow me and all of the people that I'm friends with on Facebook. Tweetups are a very good example of a good event that you can go to, have a pint with people, and leave. You don't have to be anything. But the idea that you have to go to every digital event or every online event is just draining and useless. Because it's just such a waste of time. Please stop sending people free stuff in the hope that they'll tweet, Instagram it, put it up on Facebook or blog about it, right?
Okay.
Send them 2-for-1 vouchers. Send them a physical voucher that they have to go to a store and buy the product. Send them a promo code that they'll get 50% off if they use it, or their followers will get 50% off if they use it. Because if you're a drinks company and you send me a bottle of whiskey, that's a bottle of whiskey that I'm not going to go out and buy. So you've just lost yourself and your client a sale. Whereas if you give me a voucher, I'm far more likely to use the voucher, which means you can track the voucher being used and you can, and your client can see the upsurge in sales. But this nonsense of trying to engage everybody and sending them out ice cream and beer and whiskey and whatever, and then I'll tweet a photo of it and people go, all right. It's nonsense. It's untrackable. There are no firm metrics behind it. There's so many people online who will be so quick to criticise and say, ah yeah, but you get loads of free stuff. And actually, I don't. And any of the free stuff that I get, and that's the free in inverted commas with the air commas rabbity things going up around this microphone, I'll work for. If I'm invited to an event, I'll go and I'll take video and I'll go home and I'll edit that video and I'll put it online. And I'll tweet about it and I'll Facebook about it and I'll put it on worldirish.com and all of that kind of stuff, right? So if you were paying a journalist to do that, or somebody else to do that, you're paying a lot more money than it takes somebody who's just taking it for free. Because there is no such thing as a free lunch. There is no such thing as these free opportunities that people see. Somebody is paying somewhere. So why don't you spend your money more strategically talking to the people who will actually buy your product or use your website or use your service than wasting time on trying to get influencers. I hate that word. Anyway, sorry, rant over.
And I'll finish up on that by asking you, what's on the horizon for World Irish? What are you guys planning over the next few months?
World Irish has now over 65,000 members. And really what I would love World Irish to be, or to see people using World Irish as, and actually I should answer the question, what is World Irish other than a site for Irish people all around the world? I kind of want World Irish to be a site where you can put your hand up and go, I'm Dara, I'm Irish, not proud to be Irish, not militant Irish, I'm just Dara and I'm Irish, and this is what I do. And you can upload your photos and your stories and your videos. So if you're a content creator, you can share that with an audience that might not necessarily see it. If you're a business, you can say, well, we deliver to China, or we deliver to South America, or we deliver around the world, and here's where you can buy, and here's what it can do. And we're also getting, we have a lot of partnerships with big organizations like The Gathering, like the FAI, like the GAA, Leinster Rugby, where we're kind of going, where are the people who have emigrated? What are they doing now and where are they? Because just because you've left Ireland, it doesn't mean that you're no longer a fan of Leinster Rugby.